Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the June 1st, 2020 meeting of the Berkshire County Board of Commissioners. Delighted to have all of those citizens who are on the Zoom call with us and also commissioners on the line as well. Sarah, I'd like you to do a roll call if you would, please.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. This is Sarah Tinkham, clerk to the board. I'm just going to call attendance here to see which commissioners are present either in person or present electronically. So I'm going to begin with Commissioner Ernestine Bazemore.
Here, electronically.
Okay. Commissioner Atkins.
Here in person.
Okay. Commissioner John Trent.
Here.
Commissioner Tammy Lee.
Here in person.
Okay. And Chairman Ron Wesson.
Present.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. We have all of our commissioners here ready for the meeting. We'd like to ask Commissioner Trent to give us an invocation and pledge of allegiance.
Thank you, Chairman. Bow our heads. Dear God and Heavenly Father, half of our people rejoiced and the other half were afraid. Help us remember that the spirit of democracy is not over. Dear God, bless the Floyd family. Help them with the grief that they feel, the terrible loss of life, that we are better than this. Please, God, help heal our sick and bless the families that have lost loved ones to COVID-19. Bless our first responders and our law enforcement community. Please, God, bring people together in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Amen. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Trent, for that very warm invocation and for leading us in the pledge. Now we're going to go to the appointments and reports segment of our meeting. And the first thing is a corona pandemic update from Battle Betts, Albemarle Regional Health Services Executive Director. Battle, are you there with us? Battle, are you on mute? Are you there with us?
Can you unmute Pasquotank, the boardroom?
Sarah, did you hear that request to unmute Pasquotank boardroom?
Yes, sir, I did. Ashley, you should be unmuted.
Okay, can you hear us now?
We can. Go right ahead. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for having us. This is Battle Betts. I also have a couple of staff members with me here and on the line as well. I have Ashley Stoop, our Director of Policy Planning and Preparedness. We also have Anita LaFon from our Clinical Nursing Administrative Team. We have Sarah Davison, our Nursing Supervisor for the Berkshire County Health Department, also on the line. So. I've asked Ashley to give you all a current update of where we are with the current status, and then we've got, I believe, six or so questions that we're going to try to address with the presentation tonight, and then we'll address some other ones as we go after Ashley gives her brief update. So, Ashley, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Sarah, did you want me to try to share my screen, or does everybody have copies?
Everyone has copies, Ashley.
Okay, great. Great. Well, I will just walk through that presentation then. Again, we thank you for having us tonight to provide this update on the COVID-19. It has definitely been a whirlwind year so far when you consider that the pandemic itself was declared on March 11th of 2020. And at that time, you can see that the global case count was just over 118,000. And here we are at our global count at over 6 million cases. So we have definitely seen an active pandemic, and we greatly appreciate the partnerships that we have in order to meet this head on. We do have a breakdown. This is the most current information for our region. For those on the phone who cannot see this, the screen, Bertie County has had 122 total lab confirmed cases since the beginning of this pandemic. But we are very happy to report that right now we are at only 11 active lab confirmed cases. So that means that 107 have recovered, but sadly we have had 4 deaths in Bertie County. What these numbers do tell us is that we are definitely making some strides. We know that you all did have a couple of outbreaks early on. We are actually looking at the Bertie Correctional. It should resolve this week. So that is great news. But we definitely know there has been community spread of this illness in Bertie County. And we thank the citizens and everybody who have worked with Sarah and her team over in Bertie County to make sure that they're following the guidelines and bringing this case count down. This next slide that we have for everyone really is just an overview of the phases. So we will not go through this in detail, but as you all know, the governor has outlined a very proactive approach that they are saying is based on the data and the science of this pandemic to determine our next steps. We are continuing to see cases climb in North Carolina, with this weekend seeing our largest one-day increase. So we are still very much encouraging individuals to socially distance, to limit gatherings, to wear face coverings when they are in close contact with individuals, and especially if they're high risk, to stay home. But we do anticipate these phases to transition. We believe that this phase two, the safer at home phase two, will roughly be in effect for about 5 weeks. So we're looking somewhere mid to late June. Throughout any pandemic response, two of the primary strategies are containment and mitigation. And this is with any outbreak or epidemic, pandemic. Typically with public health, our primary role is containment. The contact tracing that you all have heard so much about in the news and everything else like that, which we'll go over in just a little bit, that is what public health nurses do day in and day out. We call them our disease detectives, because they are the ones that, when they get notified of a reportable condition, they follow up with that individual, they determine where they were exposed, what they need to do to take care of themselves, and then obviously in situations where we have outbreaks, that that activity ramps up. So obviously early on in a pandemic, very focused on containment, because the ultimate goal was to stop it in its tracks. Unfortunately, with this pandemic, that could not be done, and so we moved more to the mitigation strategies. So right now where we are is we're seeing the mitigation in full effect. We are seeing the guidance to providers. We're limiting that personal, environmental, and community spread by limiting those contacts. That's what these phases are. But as we back down on the phases, we are, again, ramping up on that containment. So as we move through this, we will likely see waves of activity, so to speak, with this pandemic. And so, excuse me, you may see some shift between these various containment strategies and the mitigation strategies. Right now, our most current testing guidance for the state of North Carolina is that clinicians can consider testing for any patient in whom COVID-19 is suspected. They really are encouraging the use of commercial labs, primarily because the state lab just does not have the capacity to handle the large numbers of tests that could come in. And so they're really empowering our commercial laboratory systems. They want to see testing of anyone with symptoms suggestive of COVID-19, close contacts of known positive cases, regardless of symptoms. And then regardless of symptoms, anyone with higher risk of exposure or disease. So those could include the congregate care settings where we are seeing some outbreaks. high-risk individuals, marginalized populations, healthcare workers, first responders, frontline essential workers. Again, based on that exposure. The state lab does have different requirements as far as submitting those specimens, and those are symptomatic individuals, and they must be either seriously ill or at high risk in the hospital, in high-risk settings like nursing homes or congregate care, uninsured healthcare workers, and first responders. They also have postmortem guidance as well. So we really do focus on this guidance. You know, when we're looking at any type of outbreak or disease surveillance mechanism, you know, we always see this guidance change, and it's really based on the case definition. It's based on what we're seeing and the availability of resources at that time as well. Right now, COVID symptoms, they do include fever, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, new loss of taste or smell. This is another example of where this case definition has evolved. Early on, the primary symptoms that were associated with COVID-19 were fever, cough, and shortness of breath. But through the case investigations that our nurses have done and many others across the country, they've realized that these symptoms have expanded. And so that's where we've seen this grow. I won't go into this slide, but there is we do have an outline of those at high risk for severe illness. Obviously, those are individuals 65 and older, those who live in that congregate care facility, and then individuals who have certain underlying medical conditions, primarily if they are not well controlled. If individuals are sick, we definitely recommend that they call their doctor. We are working to expand our testing capacity. You know, obviously, we do have the state lab test kits. We are working to expand our commercial testing capacity as well, since obviously, as you can see through the testing guidance, those aren't quite as restrictive. But we are in the process of getting those in and offering that. But really, we want to encourage individuals to contact their primary care provider. Those individuals know them the best. They know their chronic conditions. They know that case management. Obviously, we're going to get alerted if we have a positive case, but we are there as well to do testing for our community as needed. Definitely, we encourage everyone to call ahead. Our providers have many different procedures to minimize exposures. That's ultimately what we want to do, and also to maximize the use of personal protective equipment. With every test, the individual has to don their personal protective equipment, from goggles, gloves, mask, gowns. So we definitely want to make sure that we have those supplies ready at any time, and that we are being good stewards of those supplies, because they are hard to come by. So a lot of people are questioning, you know, what if I'm positive? What is contact tracing? So if you are tested and your lab result comes back as positive, regardless of where you're tested, once that positive lab result comes in, you will be contacted by your local health department. So in most cases for Bertie County, you all know Sarah Davidson, and she is most likely going to be the one that contacts you first. She does have a fantastic team, and of course we do backup, you know, within our region as well. But she's going to talk with you about your symptoms, who you've been in contact with, and that way we can determine who we need to reach out to follow up on the guidance as far as their quarantine efforts. We'll provide guidance on how you can take care of yourself, how you isolate yourself to prevent getting others sick, and they'll be checking in with you regularly as well, just to make sure that you're doing well and that your symptoms are resolving. Contact tracing is the identification and monitoring of persons who have been exposed to that positive case. So these are individuals that are close contacts. And what we mean by that is someone having direct contact with or being within 6 feet for at least 10 minutes while not wearing the recommended personal protective equipment. So obviously, household contacts are most definitely going to be close contacts. But we will work with individuals to see, you know, did they go to the grocery store? Were they wearing that personal protective equipment? Were they at work? Who did they come in contact with? Did they go to some sort of social gathering? Did they go to church? You know, we'll ask those types of questions so that way we can identify those cases. And then those individuals are contacted and they're asked to self-monitor for 14 days. The 14 days is because that is the incubation period. Most people will become sick within that 14-day period. So they'll watch for increased temperature and other signs and symptoms as well. Another big question that we get is, you know, do I need another test to tell me that I'm negative and I'm good to go? And that answer is no. This is essentially the guidance right here. If you are sick, you can go back to your normal activities when you can answer yes to all three of these questions. Has it been at least 10 days since you first had symptoms? Have you been without fever for 3 days without any medicine for fever? And are your other symptoms improved? If you can answer yes to those three questions, then you are clear to go about your normal activities. And that contact that the nurse is doing with those positive cases, they're answering those questions. And that's how we know that those positive symptomatic cases are resolved. Other recovery definitions that we have, we could have some individuals, particularly like in our long-term care settings, where maybe it is classified as an outbreak, and so testing is done. We could have an individual who tests positive but doesn't have any signs or symptoms. So in that situation, if the person never develops symptoms, then they are considered recovered at 10 days after that test. Other recommendations, obviously, you know, I think this pandemic has illustrated so many things to us, and that is that a lot of times we have to get back to basics with those tried and true public health interventions that we all know so well. So washing our hands, that truly is your biggest defense in this particular situation. Not touching your eyes, nose, or mouth with unwashed hands, making sure you're using soap and water, or alcohol-based hand sanitizer if you do not have access to soap and water. But please note, hand washing, that's our favorite. We definitely want individuals to wash those hands. Avoiding contacts with others who are sick. Staying home when you're sick. You know, we're all guilty of it, but that is very, very important to protect others. Covering your mouth and nose with a tissue or sleeve, not your hands. When you cough or sneeze, wearing a face covering when you're out in public. And social distancing is particularly difficult. Practice that social distancing. I know it's very hard for us Southerners, but it is definitely important in this situation. And other things, these are very stressful times. So we want everyone to keep things in perspective, take care of themselves, make sure they're getting the facts. You know, not only is this a pandemic, but it has also been termed an infodemic. There is so much information out there and there's a lot of misinformation. So we want to make sure that we're getting the right messages out. And we definitely thank Sarah and the Bertie team. They've done a great job with their Facebook messages. And that's very, very important. And making sure that we're getting messages to all the different publics and all the different target audiences that we have. Make sure we talk to our children. You know, these are hard times for them as well. This is something that they have never experienced before, and they're seeing the stress in their family members. So try to encourage compassion. Stay connected, you know, physically distant, but mentally present. And so make sure that we're supporting our friends and neighbors in this situation. We do have, obviously, our credible sources of information, our ARHS website, the CDC website, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Poison control is available for questions. We also do have a hotline with ARHS that is our 252-338-WELL. But you can also call any of our local health departments, and obviously Bertie County Health Department right there on the grounds of the hospital with great staff that we are so proud of. So hopefully we have answered the majority of your questions, but
there were a couple of questions that I don't think we addressed in the presentation. The first one was posed, if there's a permanent Bertie County resident who passes away in another county due to COVID-19, is the death counted as Bertie County or the county where the death occurred? In most cases, the death is going to count where the person resides. So the answer would be yes, the person, the death happened, is counted in the county where the person resides. I will say the exception to that rule is in our congregate living facilities, in a nursing home. Our nursing home, our situation here in one of our outbreaks in Elizabeth City, we have we've had some residents that were some of the 11 that have passed away in the nursing home that are residents of neighboring counties. And so they count in Pasquotank's statistics for deaths, not those neighboring counties. So that would be the one, that would be the one exception to that rule. There was another test. There was also another question. Let's see, there was contact tracing specifically. How does that contact tracing occur? And Ashley did touch on those, but this was an example of someone who was perhaps at the post office. And how would that work? And when we do the interview with the patient that is positive, confirmed positive, we quickly find out where they've been, who they've talked to, who they've been around in those situations that were greater than 10 minutes and closer than 6 feet and all of those conditions, and we reach out to those folks. Now, that is, it's never easy work, but I think it will become much more challenging in the weeks ahead as we get into late June, early July. Our group sizes right now are limited to 25 for outside activities. So in most cases, our communicable disease nurses have a, I won't say a small net, but it's smaller than what it could be. You will likely see, as we move into June and July, situations where, similar to like when you see a restaurant outbreak, if someone's been exposed to, say, hepatitis, then you would see a public service announcement saying, if you ate at XYZ restaurant on these dates, you may have been exposed to hepatitis. Please contact your local health department, because those could be people driving through town and anything like that. But we do have protocols, long-lasting protocols, as Ashley alluded to earlier, we've been doing for years. But I think as the masses grow and the sizes grow of these groups, that will become more and more of a challenge, and we'll have to lean more on our public education and outreach. There was also another question about testing. Testing is available at all of the, at most of the area providers, that is at the local health department as well. To use our state kits, there are some parameters that we have to follow as far as people being symptomatic and in certain high risk groups that Ashley went through a little bit earlier, but we also have obtained some lab kits from LabCorp and Quest Labs and some others. I'm also happy to announce, and I will say that the protocol does not promote mass testing in such that you would promote, that you would go test every man, woman, and child who wasn't symptomatic and wasn't high risk. The goal is to really focus on those vulnerable populations. But I am very pleased to announce that we've been working with Roanoke Chowan Community Health Center, and I believe she'll be reaching out to Mitch if she hasn't already. We're gonna try to coordinate with our emergency managers. The federally qualified health centers in Bertie, Gates, and Hertford County received over $300,000 each specifically for testing. And so we've been trying to work with those FQHCs to utilize those resources before we tried to ask you all to utilize the county dollars, because I know you've got a lot of other needs with EM and EMS and all your other county departments. So we were trying to get creative with that and partner with our federally qualified health centers. And so the dates of those are forthcoming, but we anticipate at least a few dates in each of those three counties coming up soon. And so I'm very, very pleased that we'll be able to offer that. And again, this is not what I would consider mass testing. I think it's just expanded capacity to meet what the clinical guidance is out there right now. So in other words, those folks that are have immunocompromised conditions, and I'll say that if they're out of control, if they have managed diabetes, or managed asthma, they really don't fall into one of the higher risk categories. So it's really dependent on the individual care and individual needs of that of the individual patients. Let's see, we talked about contact tracing and the education piece. We can always, all of us can continue to do education on definitely the signs and symptoms and prevention measures. We can all continue to sing a collective message with that one. But with that, I think we've addressed the questions that were posed in advance, and we'd certainly welcome any other questions from the group to, and again, we've got some folks on the phone that can also help address any concerns.
This is Commissioner Bazemore. I have a question. I've noticed that we still social distancing as well as wearing a mask and we're washing our hands, but I haven't heard anything about the gloves. Is that still a necessity or they dropped that one?
Thank you for that question. The golden standard there is really wash your hands. Number one, and that number one message is to wash your hands. The old-fashioned hot water, sing happy birthday two or three times, good old-fashioned soap. If that's not available, then hand sanitizer. Gloves are like any other surface, quite honestly. They can collect debris and germs and contagions. And it's honestly harder to get those clean in a lot of situations than it is to wash your hands. Obviously, if you're doing clinical work and that type of thing, it would be for proper PPE, drawing blood, and any of those types of situations that you would want to use gloves. But out in public, in conjunction with a face guard, I don't think that would be necessary or needed. The face guard and the face guards are really not to protect you, it's really to protect those around you. It's preventing you from spreading something unknowingly to those that are around you. So that's kind of where they are with the PPE. But hopefully that addressed your question.
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Battle and Ashley, thank you so very much for your update. If there are any additional questions from the commissioners on the line, they can ask them now. But we want to really thank you for your guidance and for your information sharing. And we relied very heavily on Albemarle Regional Health Services to kind of keep us connected, not only to the numbers, but to the advice and information that we can share with our citizens. As you know, we're having a town hall meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, a virtual town hall meeting at 7 p.m. Now, this will primarily be some of the local folks from the county on that call. But we wanted to have Battle, you and Ashley tonight at our commissioners meeting, have a little bit more time for you to share more detailed information with us. And thank you so very much. Any other questions from commissioners?
Great report, guys. This is Commissioner Lee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you all very, very much. Next on our update and appointment schedule is the representatives from MHA Works, Amber Idle and Danny Hoff. They're going to be giving us an update on the library and corporate extension facility update. Amber and Danny, are you there?
Good evening. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. You're coming through loud and clear.
Wonderful. I think Amber is going to, this is Danny, Amber is going to give you an update on construction and COVID-related items related to the construction site. Amber, are you there?
Hello? I think I was muted. Okay. great. So I'm kind of going to start with an update since the last meeting that we spoke of the construction activities going on site. The exterior steel for the building has already started last month. That is the blue that you see going on the exterior metal, and the interior still had already been painted. Preparations for the rooftop HVAC units was taking place today while Danny and I were on site. the wood decking over the library area is about 50% complete. That should complete within the month. The air barrier and waterproofing to the outside of the building is about 90% complete. They have to come back and finalize a few things. On the inside, we have the mechanical ductwork is about 90% complete. They were working on that today, and they're pretty close to being as far as they can get right now, complete with that. The mezzanine floor has been poured, and they've been installing mechanical in that area as well. The electrical rough-in is ongoing. That's one of the updates for COVID-19 that we wanted to give. We had about 3 weeks ago, we had an update from AR Chesson that the electrical contractor had potentially been exposed to a positive case of COVID-19 on a separate project site they were working on. And they were working on that construction site concurrent with our construction site. So they immediately stopped work and got tested, and their test came back negative. But at that point, they basically said that they did not feel comfortable working on any construction sites where they were around 10 or more subcontractors at one time. So that's kind of put a little bit of delay on the electrical rough-in. When that happened, they did not work for over a week after that. I think it was actually 2 weeks. And then they did come in last week and do a little bit of their items that they needed to get completed. And they are not working this week either while the mechanical ductwork completes, but they're scheduled to be back next week. Some other interior items that have been going on is the cabinetry blocking has been installed so that can be attached to the walls when it comes in. Also the blocking for all the restroom accessories like the handrails and the toilet tissue and the soap dispensers. Brackets for the exterior canopies were installed. And some furniture coordination is ongoing. We are pretty much nailing down some of the final things that we need to get coordinated with both the library and the cooperative extension to get their furniture order in. Upcoming for June, the masonry on the exterior of the building, the block, the precast, and the brick should begin. Definitely the masonry block will definitely have begun, but all the material should be on site before the end of June. The wood decking should be complete. The mechanical and plumbing rough-in should be completed, and the light gauge metal trusses are also scheduled to be installed, start installation sometime within the next week. That was another item where we had a COVID delay. We had some coordination with that sub on their submittal, and it was taking a couple weeks. It was taking about a week to get a response back, and they sent a letter to AR Chesson stating that due to the COVID-19, they were understaffed within their factory, so they weren't actually able to get the submittals done or create, you know, get the materials to site. So we had quite a long delay for that, but the materials did arrive last week and are scheduled to start installing within the week. Other than those two delays on site, MHA Works specifically, we are working our way to working back in our office full time. Danny and I have still been making our weekly site visits every week as scheduled. AR Chesson has asked that we do wear masks when on site. So that is one thing if anyone goes out there, to bring your mask. And then other than that, I think our consultants are pretty much the same. They're working their way back into their offices and are also making site visits. And AR Chesson is doing the same.
I think that concludes our update for the library and cooperative extension project. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, Amber and Danny, this is Ron Wesson. I guess the big question is, where are we around the anticipated completion date now?
Sure. So right now, we have the Amber completion date is November 13th?
13th, yes.
Yeah. So that's where we are right now with the contract. We expect about 8 weather days to be coming requested for March and April. So that would bring the completion out about another week or so. So we're looking at probably around Thanksgiving, I would think, for the estimated completion. The delays that are COVID related, I think it's hard still to quantify what that actually means to the construction schedule. I know that AR Cheston is working really hard to try and make up as much of that time as they can. They've been working on the weekends and working later in the day since we're getting some more light. So that we'll keep you posted on that. If we come to the point where AR Cheston decides that they have to ask for additional days due to the COVID-19 delays, we will absolutely sit down with everybody, with Juan and William and with the commission, if you like, to discuss that. I think everyone is in uncharted water still a little bit. So we're doing the best we can to document everything and to make sure that we have a really clear understanding of delays that are associated with all the rain we've been getting. And that is a separate column from the delays that are associated with COVID-19. So Cheston is doing a great job of that. And so at this point, the contractual deadline that we expect to be safe, I would say we should probably plan for a ribbon cutting probably after the new year to give us enough time for punch lists and to get furniture moved in and to work out any kinks that the users might have to make sure that the building is operating the right way before we open it to the public. But again, as we kind of progress, I think it depends a lot on, it seems like the economy is bouncing back a bit and things are getting a little busier. People are a little more out in the on the roads and stuff now. If that continues, I would think that AR Cheston will have an easier time getting materials delivered and the delays would be less impactful. But, you know, it's hard to tell right now with what could happen next, I suppose.
Okay, great, Amber and Dan. Any other questions from the board, either one? Okay, no questions. So thank you very much, ladies, for that update. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda is our tax administrator, Jody Ray. Jody, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, Jody, we're going to reconvene as a Board of Equalization and Review. I'll open up the floor for a motion to reconvene.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Vice Chair Lee and second by Commissioner Trent. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. We are now sitting as a Board of Equalization and Review. Jody, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, this evening we have one appeal consisting of three parcels from Lynn Stalls. All three parcels are at Innsbrook. Ms. Stalls was unsure with her cell phone service if she would be able to make it. I think she is online, but she did send over she emailed me a letter stating her position. I believe Sarah has put that on your desk for you to read. Under the rules of the Board of ENR, I would now turn it over to Ms. Stalls to go over her appeal.
Welcome, Ms. Stalls. Are you there? Ms. Stalls, are you there? If you're on mute, please unmute yourself. Or Sarah, if you're going to unmute her.
She is unmuted on my end.
All right. Ms. Stalls, are you with us? Sarah, do you see that she has signed in or called in?
I do have her up here. I'm not sure if she's having some technical difficulties on her end, but I do have her listed up here as being present right now.
Okay. Well, Jody, is there any information that you'd like to share with us while we're waiting to see if Ms. Thaws can get through? We've read most of the information in your package and the correspondence back and forth between you and Ms. Thaws, which have been considerable. Anything that you can offer while we're still waiting to see if she can get through?
Basically, for all three parcels, she's stating that the appraisal team has used comparable properties that have included, that were sold with a $15,000 golf membership fee. In speaking with the management team out there, there's also, I believe, on C8, an email from Daniel Sumrall, the general manager at Scotch Hall, that has stated that the membership fee is waived as an incentive when a development lot is sold. The county attorney, Jonathan Huddleston, has closed on several of those lots out there, and in speaking with him, the stamps on the deed reference the contract price. None of these documents are showing that the value of those membership fees are included. Ms. Stalls has provided an email from the broker at Scotch Hall showing comparable properties that says that they were sold with membership. Well, the fee was waived, so the person purchased a lot. They didn't have to pay for the membership, but they got the membership. The question is, does the value of that, the sale price of that, include the $15,000 membership fee? We have not seen any documentation to state that. They do not require a membership to purchase a lot. If that were the case, then the value of the membership fee can be assessed. In this case, that's not the case. So she has, in this email she sent this afternoon, has basically taken these comparables and done an average on them. Now, in mass appraisal, in a single property sale price, you just can't look at that alone by itself. You know, our reappraisal team has spent almost 2 years conducting research to come up with our schedule of values that the board adopted last year. Those values determine how property in this county is going to be valued over the next 8 years. They were open for public inspection, there were no appeals, and they were duly adopted. In North Carolina, property valuations are presumed to be correct, and the taxpayer has the burden of proving otherwise. In doing so, they have to prove that the tax assessor used an arbitrary or illegal method of valuation, and that method resulted in an excessive value for their property. And we don't see that she has done that. Based on my conversations with Scotch Hall, with our reappraisal team, with Attorney Huddleston, we believe the sale price that is indicated on the deed and on the closing statements to be the true value of that property, the true selling price of that property. And that's what we go by. I mean, we do not contact the broker, the buyer, the seller, the closing attorney, and question the sale price. And unless we see a sale price that is substantially higher or lower than our value, then we would reach out to find out why. But that's not the case in any of these. I mean, you're not going to find a county that's going to contact somebody over every deed that comes through to verify that the stamps are true. So we are comfortable with our values. That it all boils down to that no evidence has been provided that specifically states the $15,000 membership fee is included in the sale price, even though the purchaser of the development lot received a membership because it was waived as an incentive.
Jody, I think your recommendation is very clear to us here. Ms. Stiles, are you there yet? Have you been able to get through?
Our board clerk has tried to reach her by phone. There's no answer.
Okay. Jody, I'm leery to try to have a ruling on this matter without giving Ms. Stiles an opportunity to present her case to us. So what is your recommendation that understanding that she's not been able to get through, maybe it's technical difficulty, et cetera. Do we have time to still delay this for further consideration?
Absolutely. I mean, under the statutes, you know, if a person's unable to attend, then I can do what I just did and present on their behalf, and right, the board can accept that. Or even though the board is adjourning tonight, you can still meet to hear a timely filed appeal, which this is a timely filed appeal. So when you adjourn tonight, no more appeals can be heard, but you can continue to hear this one. So it definitely can be postponed to a later date.
Well, I think that's exactly what we want to do. Ms. Stiles has specifically asked to come before us to present her case, and as a citizen, I would want to give her that opportunity to do so. So we will delay this, if I have the board, to do that. Onto a later date, and county manager, if you would try to schedule something with Mr. Ray and Ms. Stiles at our first availability so that we can listen to her and consider it. Yes, all right?
We'll do.
And I think that's the only matter before us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. I'd like to open the floor for a motion to come out as end our meeting as a Board of Equalization and Review.
Lovely.
Move on.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
You would need to adjourn.
Ah, yes, that's correct.
I make a motion we adjourn the Board of Equalization and Review. So.
Okay, it's been properly moved that we adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And second, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, nay? All right, the ayes have it. Okay, thank you very much. The next thing that we've all been looking forward to on our report is a presentation of our proposed budget, and I say proposed budget for year 2020 and 2021 by our county manager, Juan Vaughn. Second. Thank you. Turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chairman. Good evening to the Board of Commissioners, and good evening to everyone in attendance physically and virtually. It gives me great pleasure to present the fiscal plan, proposed fiscal plan, for fiscal year 2020-2021. And I will be speaking from a PowerPoint presentation. However, the information I'm sharing is basically in the budget plan or the budget message that has been updated in the link for the entire board package, and that is available online on our website. So in just a second here, we'll get started. I'm going to start by talking a little bit about revenue neutral. Revenue neutral, or general statute, requires that during a revaluation year, we have to provide and publish revenue neutral. What is revenue neutral? Exactly. Revenue neutral pretty much is a tax rate that will provide the same tax levy just based on the upcoming year's numbers or tax base. So I'll get going just a second here. So for this particular year, we had a total valuation of a certain number. I don't remember on my head, but I'll have the PowerPoint up in just a second. And with the tax rate, current tax rate of 86.5 cents, we have a certain, it was about $11 million with the tax levy. Okay, so revenue neutral says what tax rate will give us that $11 million that we had this year, but at the new values that we have from the new revaluation. So, as you'll see, it's actually that part is in your board packet, and that's under 8.4. And what you'll see is revenue neutral is about a little bit over 83 cents. Okay, and we expect it to go down a little bit because we had an increase in our tax base this year. The revaluation, we saw a little bit of an increase. So we were able to see a decrease in revenue neutral compared to our current tax rate. Okay, so what we also had to do in order to determine revenue neutral, we had to apply a growth factor. So we take a look at the changes in the total valuation each year since last revaluation. Last revaluation was 2012, on an 8-year cycle. So if you take an average of the growth each year, and that growth was about 1.15%. So we're going to take that growth rate and multiply it times the tax rate that we initially got, and that gives us a total of a little bit over 83 cents. So 0.8336 is exactly where we are for revenue neutral. Any questions about that so far? I would like to point out that revenue neutral is not something that has to be adopted. I want to be clear, I'm not proposing, recommending that our tax rate be reduced to 83 cents. Because this is a revaluation year, sooner statute requires that, again, we provide and publish that just for comparison purposes. So that is where we are with revenue neutral.
Okay.
Slightly over 83 cents. All right, so just talking about the budget message here, I think my next slide was in reference to fund balance. All right, I'm not going to talk about fund balance a whole lot right now because, as you know, we're awaiting a finalized audit. So I don't have firm numbers of exactly where we stand with fund balance, or what percent fund balance is, you know, sort of total expenditures. Don't have that just yet. But based on calculations and conversations with our auditor, we could see a decrease, okay? And for that reason, it was my goal to not to balance this budget without appropriating fund balance. And I'm so happy to say that we were able to do that. We balanced this budget without appropriating any fund balance. And as you'll see also in the budget message, since for a few years now, since 2017, there has been appropriated fund balance each year in order to balance the budget. And almost every year, the final appropriation was higher than what the original budget was. Okay? So we've done a lot of great things in the last few years. We made a lot of updated vehicles, equipment, commission groups. We've done a lot of great things, and some of that was a result of course, rents that we received, and then as a result of using tax dollars as well and fund balance. All right. So let's move forward and talk a little bit about things that drove revenue drivers or revenue factors, things that allowed us to be able to balance the budget without appropriating fund balance. There were two key factors that affected our revenue this year, and the first one is revaluation. We saw about a 5% increase in our total valuation, and that will yield us about $500,000. In addition to that, we expecting to receive through the CARES Act, the Corona Relief Fund. Each county in North Carolina is expected to receive a certain amount. Our appropriation is about $558,000, $558,274 to be exact. okay? And fortunately, we can use that for payroll expenses for public health and public safety employees, okay? So public health and public safety, pretty much our EMS and our law enforcement. We can use that to assist with salary. We can also use it for supplies, equipment, and other costs related to COVID that have been incurred since March 1st. So we have a number of things that we plan to cover with those funds, and including salaries, some equipment that we have purchased and will be purchasing, such as radios for emergency services, and that's COVID related because right now some of the EMTs and paramedics, they have to share radios, but by first condition radios that alleviate having to share, which minimizes exposure to COVID-19. So again, those two things greatly contributed to our revenues, and that was our CARES Act fund and revaluation. Now on to our expenses, expense factors, or expenditure factors, I should say. Each department, almost every department, reduced their budget by at least 5%. And we have some smaller departments, such as Veteran Services, Finance, that were not able to, weren't able to pull as much from those because they don't have as that much flexibility. However, every other department, county department that is, when it comes to administration, when it comes to governing body, when it comes to public buildings, when it comes to parks and recreation, those departments made at least a 5% cut in their expenditures. So that was another huge statement. We were able to do that. For instance, in the Sheriff's Department, there are 5 positions that have been frozen, and those positions will be frozen again this upcoming fiscal year, at least that's my proposal. In addition to 5 positions in non-emergency transport, right now the call volume does not require those positions to be filled, and outside of those 5, there's still already some other vacancies as well. So it works now in our favor or an advantage for us to not include those in this upcoming budget. Planning and inspection has a position that was funded last year, but it is still vacant. And with the flexibility that we have right now with conducting inspections, I think it would behoove us to delay that as well. So that has not been. And the last position that I propose eliminating, at least temporarily, is the assistant to the county manager. Not assistant county manager, make sure you understand me. Not assistant county manager, the assistant to the county manager position that was filled by Dominique Walker. Remember, she started out as an intern, mm-hmm. and she left us last fall. And she was great. However, with county manager, assistant county manager, clerk to the board, an executive assistant, and an office assistant, I feel like we can get by with not filling the assistant to the county manager.
Correct.
Okay? So that, all of those positions are not included in this year's budget, and again, that saved us quite a bit. So what is in the budget? We still have still contributing to employee 401k. That is in there. The special appropriations for the county public schools, they're in the budget, getting giving what they usually get. So no special appropriations were cut. Each agency that request, now some agencies of course did request more than they usually get. However, we kept it at what they usually get. So none of the special appropriations were reduced or cut. Okay? And again, our big four, I think Avertis, Public Schools, Martin Community College, from Tremont Community College, and Avertis Martin. And of course, there may be others. Other things that are included in the budget when it comes to capital outlay. We don't have a lot of capital projects or expenses included in this budget because of budget constraints. Of course, there's a lot that we could do and a lot we're still going to try to do by paying grants and things of that nature. But capital expenses that we have included do include some for emergency services as well as for the Sheriff's Department, which again can be covered through those coronavirus relief funds. Outside of that, we have a server for IT. We have a replacement vehicle in 51 prints for the Department of Social Services, and of course we get for some of that back, 50%. We have 6 replacement cars for a lease for the Sheriff's Department, and that is, thank you, guys. I appreciate that. So we have, I was on the Sheriff's Department, 6 replacement cars, and the Sheriff, he was supposed to get a number of vehicles this fiscal year, but there was a manufacturing issue, and they were not able to get those, okay? So he did not get all of what he was expected to get this year, and so of course he wanted that and what he was supposed to get next year, and I wish I could say, you know, that was possible. However, it's not, but 6, I think will be up. Other capital things that we have to look for, we do have some voting booths for elections that are included as well. I think that's about it as far as capital things that are included. Other capital calls for us to consider, including voting, include voting machines for elections, as well as furniture for the new cooperative extension space. We still need that. So let's see if I covered everything. So this was revenue neutral. Okay. So for 2020, total valuation was the $1,317,135,942. Okay, at a tax rate of 86.5%, it yielded the tax levy was $11,393,226. Okay, so I think I said 1 million. That should have been 1,317,135,942, which at that tax rate gave us 11 million value. Okay, now in order to get the tax rate for revenue neutral, we have to say what rate will give us that same $11 million with this bigger tax base that we have now of $1.3 billion. Okay, and when we do that calculation, we get a little bit over 82 cents, almost 82 and a half cents. But when we apply that growth factor of 1.15%, which again is the percent change, the average change over the last, since the last revaluation, we end up with a little bit over 83 cents. Okay, but again, that is just for information purposes. All right, so this slide just simply shows the trend of our tax rate back in 2013. Of course, we were at 78 cents. It was increased, 84 cents, 84 cents up until 2017, and then took it down 1 year, right, 83 cents. That was, it was 83 cents for a couple of years, and then it just this year right here, it was increased to 86 and a half. All right, now, and that's what I'm proposing for 2021 is that we keep it at 86 and a half cents. If all of the requests that we received would have been approved, it would have increased our tax rate by 20 cents. 20 cents, which would have put us well over. All right, so I'm going to go through you. This was just showing you exactly what's in the budget. This is fund balance appropriated. Again, since fiscal year 2017, we've appropriated fund balance to balance the budget. And then at the end of each year, the final appropriation, as you can see, is higher than what was originally budgeted. And then for 2021, we're proposing not to appropriate any. For the general fund, this just shows the increase that we've had in the general fund since 2017, and it increased up to 2020, but now in 2021, we're reducing that by a little bit based on all of the cuts that I was just discussing with you. And I talked about the revenue factors being the revaluation and the coronavirus relief fund dollars. Expenditure factors, we talked about that, about cutting across the board as much as we could and then not including those positions. Expenditures, talk about what we've included and what we, the special appropriations, keeping those things. Capital purchases, that's where I was talking about things that are included in this budget. These departments do have the capital purchases that I just mentioned just a while ago. And so what's next? We need to schedule for a work session, and we can do that. I think that's on the agenda under discussion. We need to finalize the confirm a date for the work session. Our budget hearing is scheduled for 2 weeks from now, which will be June 15th. And then, of course, by June 30th, we have to adopt a budget. Thank you. have to say thank you to my staff. Thank you to William. And did I forget anything?
One thing.
Exactly. Yes, I did not. That was a big one. You know, we've been talking about an upgrade thing. We've been talking about updating Zoom software for a while, and that is probably number one on the list. So it's interesting that I failed to mention that. But yes, Jody's tax software is included in this proposed budget as well.
Great.
Right.
Ron, first, let me say before I open it up to all of commissioners, I want to say thank you to you and to William, because I think we all know how much work went into this. And let me say this to citizens, you might have noticed that there was a little delay at the beginning because we had a little technical issue. But you see how well our new county manager adopts and works through this and doesn't miss a beat. And that's why we hired him, because we knew he was the right guy for this job. Juan, an excellent job. This is a starting position that we rarely find ourselves in as a board, to start off with a balanced budget that does not go into fund balance. I've been a commissioner here for 7 years. We've never been in that position. And we know the amount of work that it takes to get. And we've gotten there many times. But this gives us a starting position that will allow us to consider some additional things. That one, about $567,000 that we got from the state that could be used for corona-related issues, there is another $150 million that is going to be appropriated at some point. But the state has decided to hold on to that to see what the federal government is going to do in terms of their coverage for revenue loss, loss of sales tax, loss of fees, and all of the related kinds of things that we're faced with, having to have a very tight budget here. The House of Representatives has passed that. It is now in the Senate for consideration. And if we were to get that, I think they say that our anticipated revenue would be somewhere about $1.68 million. We can't count on that. So the fact that we have a balanced budget or draft budget to start with is an excellent place for us to find ourselves. So thank you, and William, thank you very, very much. We know how much you guys put into this. Now, I'll open up to other members of the board for questions, comments, et cetera.
Yeah, great job. Do we have any idea when we might get the final audit?
Yes, William and I will be continuing that discussion on tomorrow, and can't say exactly when, but hope to have some more definitive answers, particularly when it comes to fund balance by our work session. And hopefully we can see an audit within a finalized audit within the coming week.
Does this budget that we put together take in grants that we could have a loss of sales tax?
I pretty much kind of kept it flat because usually I've been conservative and not kind of going up like everybody else kind of goes up. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically saying I don't project any increase, but I'm hoping we kind of stay level.
So you're keeping it stable as last year.
Yeah, so nobody really knows that. Everybody I've seen estimates of 20% loss or whatever. But I really feel like that once we do start picking up, I'm hoping the other side's going to be more than what we lost.
And that's right.
Kind of balance itself out. Like you said, it's all a shot in the dark anyhow, because we really don't know. Therefore, if we do get it out of the money, it definitely can help offset any losses we may experience.
Okay, that was one of my main concerns when I requested that.
And I think we've been a little bit fortunate as a county in sales taxes. Sounds kind of strange to say we've been fortunate that we don't have a lot of retail kind of related kinds of businesses.
Right.
And the ones that did remain open have continued to work and actually have done more. So that, we're a little different. Well, let me say this. You look at the counties around us so far, those who have announced, yes, their preliminary budget situation. Most are saying that they are definitely going to have to raise taxes even to account for this. And now that we're starting in a position of a balanced budget, if we get those additional funds that we anticipate, puts us in position to do a lot of great things and continue to be progressive in some of the things that we'd like to have and like to fund. Anyone else?
I got one thing I'm looking forward to this work session. It looks like it may be a lot less stressful. Than
yeah.
Quick question. You heard this COVID was it relief funds? I can't remember exactly the term of it, but you, the $500,000 did you say it had to be used for salaries for first, or could be used for salaries?
It could be, but it has to be for those two provisions, the public health and the public safety.
Public health.
So it can be, but if it is, it has to be for those two provisions.
With law enforcement. I'm sorry, go ahead. Can that money supplant other funds, or does it have to be?
It can't supplant. No, it cannot. They not just supplant.
It goes back to my other question that wasn't asked. I thought it was going to ask. But that can also what our expenses are for EMS personnel, can it not?
Yes.
Okay. And for law enforcement, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes.
And that's, we just can't add to it, but we can offset what we're doing already, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yes, I just want to be clear on that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's good.
Commissioner Bayron, on the line, any questions? She might be muted. Commissioner Baseball, any questions from you? Well, until we get on the line, let me ask one other question, William and Juan. I heard that when the folks updating us on the library and corporate extension talked about some potential delays related to COVID, et cetera, if those delays run into any additional costs for us, can those things be covered? They are COVID related. If they turn into any additional costs to us, for development?
Well, at this moment, we will not see any additional cost until they actually come back with something that's proposed. They're basically working on the contract. And
right, but my question is, if there are, you know, costs to us.
It could possibly be something that you could charge to that, if need be, but I think at this moment, we're pretty much going to use it to cover.
Oh, yeah, I'm not, I'm not suggesting we put it in the budget now, but I heard them say that they were documenting delays as a result of COVID, right?
And again, if we do get new money, I have to see what kind of stipulations would be attached to that as well.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. They had that $150 million appropriation. They're anticipating it. We might not even see that until November. So, but if we do, you know, we need to be able to keep that in mind that there could be some cost that we could appropriate to that and save us money. All right.
With the contract price is what it is.
Yeah.
Chairman.
So Chairman Weston.
Yes, Commissioner Baseball. Sorry. Go right ahead.
I could not unmute myself for nothing.
Well, you got through. That's what counts.
Yes. The only thing I have to say is I really, really appreciate the county manager and Wim for doing a tremendous job. I was doubtful because we were going through with this pandemic and was so much that we had never went through, and we had a new county manager. I was really skeptical, but they have certainly proven themselves. So hats off to both of you, and I thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Any additional questions, et cetera? Great. All right. Great. Thank you. Great job indeed. We're going on now to board appointments. This is the ABC board. And you notice in your pack that you had one person who's up for consideration for renewal, and that's Mr. James Pugh. But I also want to bring to your attention that we had another person, Sharon Jones, and you see her application in front of you. I want to say, so that you understand who Ms. Jones is. Ms. Jones lives in Roxable. John, she's in your district. She has been interested in being on the ABC board since 2016. Unfortunately, these openings do not come on the board very often. She is a professional, works within North Carolina DHS. She's a 50 plus year resident of Bertie County, born and raised here. And she would very much like to serve if it is our consideration. So unfortunately, we have one position, but we have Mr. Pugh, who's reapplied for that position, and we now have Ms. Sharon Jones. So I wanted to make sure that I presented her to you for consideration, because it has been her interest to be on this board, and she does have experience in this area that could help us in planning. So I will open it up to the board. What is your pleasure?
I'll make a motion to move forward, Mr. Pugh.
Okay. Any other nominations?
No, I will second Commissioner Kent's motion. Mr. Q has served us well, and I talked to one of the other board members, and he said that he, Mr. Q, adds a lot to that board.
He does.
So I will second that motion.
Okay. Good. Then I will not then. I was going to make the motion for Ms. Jones, but since there's a motion and a second for Mr. Pugh, I will not do that. I will say, though, as additional openings come up on this board, I hope we will consider Ms. Jones because she has been interested, as I said, back from 2016 and has been interested every time, but these openings do not come up very often. So since it's your pleasure with that motion and second, no further discussion. All those in favor of reinstating Mr. Pugh to that position on ABC board, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you, Mr. Pugh. You are reinstated. Thank you. Next is our consent agenda. And I'd like to go through this a little bit quickly because we have a couple of items that I want to take into, they're going to take a little bit more time. That's items 4 and 5. So I'd like to look at items 1, 2, and 3, approved minutes for regular meeting 5/4/20, approved minutes for special call meeting 5/18/20, approved meetings for special meeting reconvene 5/20/20. We've all had these in our pack to review, so what is your pleasure?
Take a motion. We approve agenda items 1 through 4.
I think I heard a second. Commissioner Bazemore, was that you?
Yes.
Yeah, moved and properly second. All those in favor of approving these three consent agenda items, 1, 2, and 3, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you. The next thing is the approval of a resolution for the abandonment of Billup Club Road. County Attorney Jonathan, I'd like you to walk us, if you could, quickly through this resolution here in the package for consideration.
Yes. Wild Hog Plantation LLC is an owner, a landowner in Berkeley County, and the sole member manager is Dr. Jack Cole. He's filed a petition with the county and Department of Transportation asking that both DOT and the county abandon the terminal end of Little Club Road. His property surrounds the entire terminal end of that property, or that road, excuse me. It's about 1 mile in length, the portion that he's requesting be abandoned. The road is in Woodville Township. It's currently state maintained at SR 1123. And these things are set out in the different whereas paragraphs of the proposed resolution. There are no other landowners who use Billup Club Road for access to their property. Dr. Cole has had trouble over the years with people, over time, with people using the terminal end of this road for illegal dumping, parking, littering, trespassing, poaching, things of that nature. And so it's a two-step process. If the commissioners are inclined to indicate their intent to abandon the road, first step is that NCDOT needs to remove it from the state secondary system. Two statutes that are involved, both of which are cited in the resolution. One is the first prong of the procedure, which is that he files a petition. County commissioners say whether the county commissioners are in favor of his request. They, under one statute, notify DOT through a resolution saying that they ask DOT to take it off their system. And the second prong is once the DOT board has taken it off their system, so it's no longer maintained by the state, but it's still a public road. So then the county has to do the second prong. County commissioners are then have to resolve their intent to actually close the public road. Because it remains a public road. If it's been a public road, it remains a public road until the county commissioners say it's not. And so, so I've combined both steps in the same resolution, which I feel we can do because it's clear from this resolution. You see after the now, therefore, after all, whereas it says step one, step two. Step one, the commissioners are indicating their desire that it be taken off the state maintained system, and step two is that it be closed. And for the closure, when we get to that point after DOT board
removes it from the system, there's an opportunity for the public to be heard. There's a posting in the newspaper for that public, there's a publishing in the newspaper for that public hearing, and there's also signs that are posted a couple places on the road. And then you have a public hearing, and then at that point, this commission, this Board of County Commissioners decides that, one, closing a road is not contrary to the public interest, and number two, that closing it won't cut off somebody who needs access to their property. You find those two things, and then you sign the resolution or sign the order and officially close it.
Correct. Thank you, John. I wanted Jonathan to speak to that. I knew he could do it much more eloquently than I could, for sure. But let me say that I've worked with Jonathan on this and for consideration, because it came to me at the same time it came to the county manager. And Jack Cole certainly is a friend to Bertie County. The reason that it comes before us, as Jonathan said, is that even though DOT maintains it, we have an interest of citizens to protect. If this were a road that led to somewhere that citizens used going through his property to get to someplace else, commonly use that, then we would want to consider that. But this is not the case. This is a dead end to his property. He's purchased, I believe, the full 2,000 acres that covered all three of the previous hunting clubs. I'd like to recommend strongly to the board that we approve this. In fact, I'd like to offer the motion that we approve this resolution for the abandonment of Billup Club Road. Any discussion, further discussion, et cetera? I'll open for that.
Well, I mean, since we have this road ordinance in place, he understands that it will be his responsibility. Is that in writing somewhere that he has the responsibility of maintaining that road?
Yeah.
There are no residents on the road.
No, nobody on that road. Only his road going into his property. But he is going to maintain it, as he said, for the members of his hunting club. So that's their access into the property. DOT will still maintain it up to his property. That won't change.
Okay. So once it's closed, a closed road, is it then not a county road either?
Well, I think once it's closed, it no longer fits the definition of the county public road we're trying to keep from having problems. Because I think that ordinance has a definition that requires there to be a resident.
That's correct.
Or two.
Yes.
Take a couple.
Yes.
And in this case, there wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, there's been a lot of, like you said, not just people dumping trash and stuff, but actually some break-ins and things from the hunting clubs down there. And so I think it's their interest. DOT is certainly in favor of this because it saves them money. They don't have to maintain the whole thing.
I wish we could trade it out.
Don't you know? I wish we could, too. You're saving it over here, so they'll spend it over here, right? Afraid that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No net loss.
Yeah.
How about that?
But the motion is before the board. Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Moved and properly second that we approve the resolution for abandonment of Billup Club Road. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you. Now, this just approves the resolution. It still has to go for the public hearing, right, John? Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, it has to go. Well, first of all, the DOT board has to take it off their system.
That
and
is
then
correct.
It has to go for a public hearing.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, we've approved this portion. Now, the next thing is the approval of a partial release of the development agreement between Bertie County and FC Ball Gray LLC. Jonathan, can you give us a quick update on that, please?
Yes. We're the neighbors of the Salt Glass property, the county owns on the Sound. It owns an adjacent 297-acre tract of land. They're just to the south of the county's property. The company's name is ALF FCLG Ball Gray Harbor LLC. And since the first three letters are ALF, I'm just going to call them ALF. easiest way, because otherwise it's a mouthful. So ALF used to own not only that roughly 300 acres, but also almost another 1,000 acres below that. And this board may remember that tract of land in December of, in 2017, ALF sold that 982, almost 1,000 acres to the North Carolina Coastal Land Trust, who then in turn gave it to the state of North Carolina, who then in turn made it part of the initial part of the Salmon Creek State Natural Area. So now the North Carolina Coastal Land Trust, ALF The state all want to do exactly the same thing. So this one's kind of easy to explain. We're just doing exactly the same thing now that we did in 2017. And as you can imagine, the state, there's grant sources both in-state and outside of the state, federal, putting the Navy, other different grant sources. They're putting money into this. Well, part of the conditions of putting money into this and putting it into the natural, the state natural area is that it did not have any encumbrances or requirements to it. And so this development agreement that was entered into between the county and ALF back in 2008 was back when they thought they were going to do, you know, the Ball Gray Harbor master plan. They had the, it was all spelled out at the time schedule they were going to develop it, and there were certain uses that were allowed, certain densities. Well, that hasn't come to pass, and so I guess everybody's found a better use for it, and that's with the Salmon Creek State Natural Area. So this release is basically the first one was called a partial release because it released about two-thirds or, you know, three-fourths of the land from that development agreement. This just finishes it off. So it's a final total release, and it's basically, so it's the county, which this board, if you're so inclined, would need to approve it. And then once it's signed, it'll be given to the closing attorney, and would then be recorded at the closing, which is right now scheduled for June 12th. So we've
that
pretty much summarized
okay.
In case you have any
questions. So, John, I take it that your suggestion is that, or recommendation is that we would approve this to go forward, right?
Correct, yes, sir.
Any discussion from the board before we put it to a vote? Hearing none, floor is open for approval of the partial release of development agreement between Berkeley County and ALF Ball Gray LLC.
So moved.
Has been moved. I had second. Moved and properly second for the approval of this partial release. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. And done. Thank you, Jonathan. There's one matter that was not on the agenda but just came to us, which was the Berkeley County Register of Deeds report that we always have on here, and we have it in front of you now for consideration. So I will ask the motion to accept and approve the Register of Deeds report.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and properly second. Commissioner Lee and Commissioner Trent is the second. I noticed that there were two marriages in Berkeley County. So that's always a good thing. I always look for that. So all those in favor of accepting this report, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you very much. That's approved. Now, we go on to our discussion agenda. And the first thing is budget amendments and updates from our finance director, William Robertson. William, the floor is yours.
Hopefully, y'all got a revised budget amendment, because I think the one that was in the pack.
We did. We got it.
And it's real simple. I just have the state has issued an update that LEAP money is going to go up by $4,970. I just need to authorize that so I can put it in there for new uses.
Okay. Great. That's pretty simple. Floor is open for acceptance of that budget amendment.
Make a motion we accept it.
Co-Chair Lee made the motion. Do I hear a second?
Aye.
Commissioner Trent, we've now, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. We've now accepted the budget amendment. Thank you, Lee, very much. Next is the virtual town hall meeting that's scheduled for June the 2nd. That's tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Okay. Well, I think all the plans are made. We're ready to go. We had tried to keep it within 30 minutes. I think we're very close. We may be a few minutes over, but it is very close. And I think it's kind of neat. We considered at first having Albemarle as a part of that, but we really wanted to hear more in-depth kind of update for them, and that's why we included them tonight. So that was great. But I think you're going to really love this. Citizens, please call in, be a part of this Zoom call if you want to see these folks who are presenting or if you just want to hear it. We're going to have the governor is going to be on the call because he wants to speak directly to Berkeley County. We're going to have our new superintendent of schools, Dr. Otis Smallwood. We're going to have a representative from the faith-based community, the moderator of the West Roanoke Association, Reverend Roosevelt Whitehead. We're going to have an actual coronavirus survivor who's going to be talking about, you know, his story, which I think you'll find very, very interesting, and a lot of others on here. But we're going to keep this short and sweet, but I think it will be full of information for citizens. So please, I'm asking everybody to please join us. If you want details, you can just look at our site. And we mailed a flyer to every household in the county, giving you instructions, but we'd love you to be on this call.
Yes, and those methods, Chairman, include, of course, Zoom on your computer, use telephone, and as well as Facebook Live.
Right, and it'll be visual on both Zoom and Facebook Live. Right, okay. Anything else? Did I miss anything, leave anything out? Okay, I just wanted to say thanks to the Coronavirus Task Force who really did the hard work in putting this thing together. I think they have a good plan, and I think it's going to be a lot of great information for citizens. Okay. Commissioners, budget work session and date confirmation.
Commissioners, I would like to propose, of course, the next step, as I said, is to have a work session, and I would like to propose the date of Thursday, June 4th at 10 o'clock, if that works for everybody. If not, we can discuss and come up with a time that does. So, again, that was Thursday, June 4th at 10 o'clock.
That's this Thursday, June 4th at 10 o'clock.
Works for me.
Good.
Commissioner Lee said it works for her. Commissioner Trent works for him, works for me. Greg?
Yes.
Ernestine, can you make it unanimous? Commissioner Bazemore?
I'm trying to unmuting her.
Okay. Commissioner Bazemore, can you make it unanimous? Are you available Thursday, June the 6th, 10 o'clock?
June the
4th. June the 4th. Thank you.
And we can provide a Zoom call just like we're doing now, as well as those who want to attend physically.
Right. Commissioner Bazemore? She may have been trouble getting through. That's why we need better internet coverage here in Bergen County.
Okay, I'm on.
You there?
I see.
Okay,
yes,
great.
I'll be available till 2 o'clock.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. We have everybody there. That works.
Oh, right. I said 10. She said she'll be available until 2.
Oh, okay.
It starts at 10.
10 o'clock.
Gotcha.
Okay, great. Great.
Get it done. I think we should be able to, but if not,
that
we can keep working.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I was just hoping we might as well do what they will think.
Right.
Twice.
I think starting with a balanced budget already. Right.
Aye.
And that was when we had to cut.
And we were looking
many dollars.
a whole bunch
of money we had to cut. Yeah.
Between now and then, can we get
All right, good. We have
sooner rather than later.
Right.
Thank you.
We have consensus around Thursday, June the 4th at 10 o'clock start. And we're going to be here, physically here, or what would you like to meet?
Here.
I will be physical.
Okay, here. Okay, great. Census 2020 update and response rates by municipalities. County manager?
Sorry. I will provide that update. I'm going to give you percentages by municipality as well as what our national average is, as our planning director and census liaison Tracy White did the last time. Right now, the national average is 60.5%. North Carolina sits at 56.5%. And Berkeley County is at 44.7%. And now I'll give the breakdown by municipality. So Askewville right now is at 66.4%. Allander is at 20.3%. Coleraine is at 45%. Kelford is at 16.3%. Lewiston-Woodville, 15.7%. Powellsville, 11.8%. Roxable, 26.7%, and Windsor, 54.4%. And these rates have increased for most since our last, Our planning director, this liaison, Tracy, has been contacting our mayors and municipal officials to engage them and let them know that, you know, we have a goal of getting as many responses as we can. It's very critical that our citizens complete the census. Those coronavirus relief funds that I was just mentioning, those allocations were based on population. So that's another example of how critical it is for us to count every person, to ensure every person is counted. So it's critical for our municipality, you know, to buy in and encourage all of our citizens to complete the census.
Albemarle Regional Health received some COVID money too, and it was based on population in eight counties. So mm-hmm.
Well, if I can speak on something real quick, I've had several phone calls from elderly people in District 4 that do not use a computer whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They're in their 80s. And one perfect example is Martha Thompson, who used to be the mayor of Lewiston years ago. And she says, I don't use a computer. They usually mail this to me. I usually get a paper copy where I can fill it out and then mail it back in. Well, under the circumstances, people in Lewiston, Kelford, and Rockwell are not receiving any of these copies. And I think if they got a paper copy, you would see that number much higher than what it is. Because these people are calling. I've had three calls.
All of them have not been mailed yet, to my understanding, to our communities. And the COVID situation, I'm sure, has delayed some of that. However, one of the things that we asked Sarah to do, and I'm sure she has done this, is you don't have to wait for your piece in the mail. There is a number that you can call. And I put that number out there because it's actually easier, I think, for seniors who have telephone access. You call. There's virtually no waiting. Somebody answers almost immediately, and they can take you through it and get you counted in 10 minutes.
It doesn't go, if you would like to do this, push this number.
No,
right.
No, it's a live person. As soon as you call, answer the phone. I've given it to about five different citizens. Every one of them said thank you. They loved it. So we asked Sarah to post it, that number. It's an 800 number.
We need to call the mayors. The towns that Lackey, Powellsville, Lewiston, Kelford, Roswell, all of the mayors, let's be honest with you, and have that phone number in their office so that they can give it to these people. So if I receive phone calls where I'm talking to these people, I can turn around and say, give the mayor, you've got the number, you can call it directly at the 800 number, and somebody will come on that you talk to and tell them exactly what your information is.
It's a breeze.
Yeah, Powellsville has done a great job. They have advertised times that the citizens can come in and get help completing the census. So their number has come up some, but yeah, there's somebody sitting in the town hall during those advertised times. So that's
you're not gonna have that killed.
Well, I gotta give some credit to Askerville. Whatever they're doing. I mean, weeks ago they were like above 60%, and they've just blown it out. You know.
Just
yeah, well, they've done a good job of doing it. You know, in fact, I know Sarah has called several of the other townships and said you might want to check with Askerville to see what they have done, because they did great work outreach through the churches and through the, you know, town commissioners and the whole works. It's worked well.
And Chairman, I have that number for your information as well as the public who's here and maybe listening as well. And that number is 1-800-330-2020. And again, that's 1-800-330-2020.
I'd ask for your consideration to see if there, and discuss with Trace any ways that we can get something to all of our citizens with that number. I know we posted it on the site, but can we put something in the water bill? Can we do something? Let's pull all stops out, because everyone we miss is $1,600 an estimate of lost revenue to this county, and we cannot afford this. And the other thing that census counts on, in the last 7 years, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but we've raised the ranking of Bertie County in the ranking of counties every single year. And the one last thing that keeps us from going up significantly more is that we are declining population. And we know that we are probably not declining as much as they have. So this can make a big deal for us.
2014 and 2015, one of those years, whatever year it was, we ended up not being able to get some grants.
That's correct. That is correct.
And through we're trying to get some more stuff.
Yeah, and even when you do get it, they give you a higher, you know, interest rate, you know, based on, you know, the population or whether or not it, you know, you are a low wealth community or low wealth area. Great. All right. Thank you. The last thing on our discussion agenda is Blue Jay Recreation Center and the updates and plans for the grand opening.
Yes. And so our public buildings and maintenance director, Anthony Rasko, should be on the line to provide that update.
Anthony, you there?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, we hear you. Yeah, we hear you.
Yes. Everybody hear me well?
Yes, sir.
I'm coming in well.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm getting to hope each and every one of you had a blessed and great day today. But unfortunately, I had a sad day because we failed inspection, but there was four small items that we fell upon, and one of them being the plumbing pipe, the overflow pipe needs to be upgraded with a different material. Secondly was a pole that need to be added to the landing at the stairway. And we had some trim that need to be, I guess we would say, looked at by one of the contractors. And fourth, we had additional fire extinguisher need to be added in the gymnasium area. Other than that, everything went fine. I do foresee this inspection being rescheduled the perhaps by the end or the first of this week, and I don't see any problem with getting these issues addressed and passed. but however, that being said, we should have that building completed and passed by next week. Without a doubt, but now in the budget, it's pretty much exhausted, but it's one or two things that were asked upon when we initially entered in this project was from the Gold Leaf Project grant was having such as exercise equipment, maybe the picnic area and stuff completed, but we did not allot anything for those two things and the building sign itself. And I do see ourselves reaching out to different resources. They have reached out and was awarded a grant for an ice machine, which we have installed that. But like I said, we're going to be excluding those materials as the exercise equipment and the picnic tables. But the community has been coming out, enjoying the walking trail before this pandemic we entered. But they are beginning to come back out and enjoy in morning and evening. And we have people of all ages that participating in the walking trail. But other than getting the building passed and looking into other resources for equipment, I think we'll be fine as of next week.
So what about the plans for the grand opening?
I can.
That's one thing I need to get in, where I have a delay talking to the county manager about. We were trying to get through the pandemic, and but at this time here, I should fortunately be able to make plans to discuss a grand opening.
Right. Well, I think Juan has some comments to make on that. Juan?
Yes. Once we get that certificate of occupancy, we should have that well before we start gathering again. So once this pandemic is over, I was looking for whether it's hopefully we'll be able to do it this fall, if not this spring. But whenever we're able to gather again in bigger numbers, I think it would be great to have a grand opening. And I know several of you have been very enthused about this project and involved from the beginning with Blue Jay. So if you all had any ideas as to things that you would like to see included in that grand opening, please let us know, and we'll start getting something together.
In 5 weeks, the government, we should go into phase three. Won't phase three allow us to do something sooner?
If we don't have any type of surge anywhere.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're going to pass it.
Right. If our numbers continue to stay, you know, stagnant and not increase.
Right.
Yeah, if we go into phase three in mid-June, I think is what they were saying. Anyway, mm-hmm. whenever that is, late June. Could we not do something then?
Possibly.
I mean, it'd be hot, so it has to be short and sweet.
let me say this though. You know, when we got the approval of the Blue Jay community and their association to lease this property to the county for a dollar for the next, I think it's 30 years, we made the agreement that we would not only help build a center there, but we would maintain it, the grounds as well. So, Anthony, I think it's very, very important that, you know, just as we maintain our baseball fields and stuff at our rec center, we should take that same kind of consideration in updating that facility grounds at Blue Jay. That's now the county's responsibility. So we should not see the grass growing all up, and we should make sure that we put effort into keeping that in tip-top shape. That was our promise to the citizens when they gave us the authority to do this. Would you agree?
Oh, yes, yes. And we have set a plan in place that we got the guys out at least once or twice a week, but due to the weather, we're doing at least once a week, cutting, maintaining the yards and whatnot. And definitely we want to continue on doing that.
Great, great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Commissioner.
Commissioner Baysmore?
Yes. I would just like to say I would hope that we will hold off a little while for the grand opening. You can have an opening, but not the grand opening, because Governor Cooper said he would like to attend. And I would like to see a lot of the people in the community to be able to attend. So if we can see how this COVID is going to go, I think it would be better off. And a lot of people will be able to attend.
Great. Next thing on our agenda is the commissioner's report. Commissioner Baysmore, let's start with you since you were just on for us. I don't want to lose you again.
I wasn't going to mute myself. I just want to say that I did attend Assembly Day, and it was different. You know, pretty much our group talked about the COVID and how we were dealing in our area. And the same went for what they call the coffee talk. We discussed the challenges that we are now facing. And that was pretty interesting how different counties were handling it. And I also want to say on June 20th, there will be COVID testing and antibody testing here in Bertie County on 322 School Road. If you have insurance, bring it. If you don't, no one will be turned down. And also the farmers market will be opening up, and they said they have plenty of vendors and lots of organic food. So I think they'll start next Friday. But anyway, that's all I have for today.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Atkins.
No, sir.
Okay. Commissioner Lee.
Yeah, I also joined in on the Assembly Day. It was interesting. Commissioner Baysmore and myself have been attending for the last 4 years, I guess, and so this was definitely different, but you have to do what you got to do in times of pandemic. So I look forward to meeting with everybody next year, hopefully, in person. We had a in-person airport authority meeting last week, I'm losing track of time, but we were hoping to meet in our new conference room, outside, so we could socially distance and all that good stuff, but they were putting on the roof, and so we couldn't sit underneath them while they were doing all that work. But we also, the Tri-County Airport new terminal will be, we are looking at a mid-November completion, and so we're getting really excited, and we're, it's lots of decisions that have to be made between now and then, and lots of work. So if Airport Authority, comprised of Berkeley, Hertford, and Northampton County, we'll be working hard to get that terminal open.
Great. Commissioner Trent.
I'm good.
Oh, one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
The food pantry, mobile food pantry, is in Powellsville tomorrow. We start at 11, so please come get you drive-through and get you some groceries.
Okay, great. I only have two things I'd like to mention. First of all, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, if you're leaving Windsor on 308, going west toward Lewiston, about a mile outside of Windsor, there's a large magnolia tree on the left-hand side of the road, right past that feed market. And it's been a huge tree ever since I was a child. And everybody always talked about it being one of the largest magnolia trees in the state. However, no one has ever applied to register that tree for official recognition with the state. So a friend of mine, who is my neighbor and a property owner over in Belhaven, is a distinguished professor from the botany department at UNC. He and his wife, my wife and myself, went out yesterday. We did all of the measurements for the tree. We filled out all of the papers. And from our measurements, we're fairly confident that we may have the largest magnolia tree in the state of North Carolina. They have to confirm that, but we took pictures and we did all of the paperwork, and we're going to submit that this week, and I'll let you know how it turns out. But I think we're in pretty good shape.
A tourist
trip. Yeah, that's right. Come see the magnolia. The last thing I'll say is that I hope the citizens have enjoyed, even though we'd love to have you here in person, but being able to still listen in through Zoom on our meetings. Well, I want to inform you that the county now has invested in some equipment that will allow us not only to have better audio, but video all of our commissioner meetings at some point going forward. We're still in the testing stage of some of that equipment, but I think it's going to offer us an opportunity so citizens can not only listen in, but see this board in operation.
I think we need to take a vote on
that. We will. We haven't voted, but we talked about it for a while, but anyway. It will give citizens a chance to see this board in operation and be able to post those recordings so citizens can still listen to it when they can't, you know, if they're at work or elsewhere. So it will give us an opportunity, put it that way. All right. I guess that's it for commission reports, county manager reports.
Yes, I have one thing. During the last meeting, you as a board extended the waiving convenience fee utility shutoffs until May 31st. However, since that time, the governor has issued executive order number 142, extending the prohibition of utility shutoffs and implementing a 3-week moratorium on eviction. And that went into effect on the 30th. So 3 weeks of the 30th would be June 20th. So again, and that's for shutoffs. So I would recommend that, I don't have to recommend to go along with that, but in addition to that, extending the convenience fee as well. And so we're just able to go ahead and let citizens know we can start at, say, a date of July 1, and we'll no longer have to be covering waiving the fees or the utility show.
Okay.
And that's what makes it lost.
So, Board, what is your pleasure of extending that, what, you say to the end of the month?
I make a motion we go along with the county manager's recommendation.
I second that.
Right. Moved and properly second. Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor extending it to the end of the month, please say aye. All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Great, great, great. Sure, citizens will appreciate that. County Attorney, any reports?
Just one quick thing.
Yes.
As you know, the Salt Glass and Water property has a strip of land that connects it to the Long Gray Road. Also, it has fully enforceable valid easements that connect it to Bald Gray Road and to Highway 17. Sometime back when we were one of the prior meetings, this board asked Lloyd and I to get an estimate of what it would actually take for a surveyor to put that easement on the ground, and also the bend where it goes to Highway 17. I spoke verbally to Roanoke Land Surveying, Randy Nicholson. I know that there's some other surveys that he's done in that area, so he was a good one to go to. And so he gave me a quote over the phone of $3,400 to survey that easement. I wish I had checked to see the length. It's a fairly long easement to get. The easement length goes all the way from Bald Gray Road all the way up to Highway 17, past the property up to 17. And what he would do is he would mark the center. He could do it in a two-step process. He could mark the corners, the edges and the corners, where the easement turns to Highway 17. And then he can come back whenever the county is ready to actually construct a road and do full flagging along the entire boundary and meet with the contractor. So basically, it's not something that you need to take any action on right now. It's just something we had talked about, and you wanted to get an idea of what it would cost for the appropriate time, whenever the county or this board is ready to go forward with putting that easement on the ground and starting to look at constructing a road. So again, that's $3,400.
Great, thank you.
And so I guess I would just propose this, either we can, at some point we get that in writing. We could also, I don't know if we want to entertain any other type of bids. It's not something that's required by law, since it is a service and you're not constructing. The construction of the road might be a different story, but not the surveying of the road. So I just sent that evidence to you and give that something for you to think about.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. Thank you for following through with that. We're also
Chairman Wesley.
Yes.
Before we go into closed session,
we do have public comments. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I do have one thing I would like to say or suggest. The flyer I received today in reference to the COVID-19 was good. It was an eye catcher, and I want to suggest that we do the same thing for the census and put details on it so people will understand the importance of filling the census or calling that number. Because that flyer caught my eye. So that whoever did the flyer did a great job.
Yeah, I think Sarah and the task force worked on it. I think the cost of doing that one pager to mail to every resident in Berkeley County was around $5,000. So, but I agree with you. I'd like us to consider it because I think it would be well worth it. But it's a costly proposition.
It would be worth its weight in gold if people would respond.
So how would you like us to move forward? Would you like that to make that a proposal, a recommendation, or just consideration?
I would love to see it in action because we really need our numbers to go up.
Right. Well, I'll ask our county manager, is this something that, and William, is something that we can afford at this point?
Well, there are a number of things that the census sends and we can take a look at and the information that they provide for us and before we say that we're going to send something else out because we don't want to be, duplicating anything that's already going out.
Right.
But we will take a look into that, to exactly what's going out, because Tracy has been speaking with our representative and she's been sending information. But we can take a look at that and there may be some less in the advertising budget.
I'll also see if they actually fund any of these type of actions.
Right.
Or they might have some money to help.
That's a good idea. Good idea.
Yes.
Did you hear that, Commissioner Bazemore?
No, I couldn't hear.
Yeah, I think with that, William and Wanda suggesting that we're going to check with the census folks and see if they perhaps could cover any portion of that, or and to see if they have any other plans in place to send out information, you know, in the near future about census. We don't want to duplicate something that they might be getting ready to do, but they'll check into that and get back and advise us.
Perfect.
Okay, great. All right, so. Next thing on agenda, and we do have one member of the public here who has something that he wants to discuss with us. That's Mr. Terry Pratt. Terry, thank you for being patient with us, and the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I will say what I'm about to read, some probably won't agree with, some will. However, I have been in discussion with Mr. Ed Goodman over the past 2 weeks, and I spent an hour on Bob Steinberg's front porch yesterday. So it's not like I'm not doing my homework. I am. I have also been involved in that Rio North Carolina Now group in Raleigh with the rallies. And I would like to comment on those people that attended. They were very well behaved, very orderly. There was no one out of the way. There was no trash left behind us. We made sure of that. And I hope that the governor listened to some of what we had to say, and I think he did. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, if you are concerned about getting coronavirus, then you stay home. Why do I have to stay home just because you're a student? How about you stay home? You stay in your house indefinitely. You wear a mask. You socially distance yourself from me. You avoid restaurants. You avoid baseball games. You stay off the roads. You avoid malls and beaches and parks. You believe in the made-up death numbers. You believe the media hype. You get a vaccine while avoiding vitamin C, sunshine, and the things God gave us to actually heal. I'm done playing your dumb game. We are not all in this together. I'm not wearing your dumb tinfoil hat anymore. I am no longer going to be a prisoner of your fear. I am no longer staying in my house or catering to you because you're a student. I'm not wearing a mask and I'm not staying 6 feet away from you anymore because I'm not afraid of you. You are not my enemy. And if I get sick, it's not because of you, it's because of me and my system, which not only have I been addressing for quite some time, but I also know how to treat if I get sick. This virus or whatever it is already circulating. Millions of people have already encountered it, as it's been circulating around the world probably since last September. You will have to confront this thing if you haven't already. There is no way around it unless you lock yourself up in your house and it somehow doesn't manage to hop on some mail or some groceries that you ordered online. Your fear is not an excuse to destroy America. Your fear is not my fear. And your fear does not have the right to interfere with my life, my job, my income, or my future as a free American citizen. So if you're scared, that's your problem, not mine. But please keep your fear contained to your little corner of the world and don't contaminate me or my family or my country. The only way to overcome this virus is to confront head on, up front, and deal with it. The survival rate is 97% to 99%. It is no more deadly than the flu. Yes, people will die from it, just as they will die from the flu, from pneumonia, from cancer, or heart problems, or. Masks are not good for you. Neither is social distancing. That practice will destroy this nation. We need to, as a nation, stand and fight, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder. In God's name, go forward as a country united. Satan is in charge of the retreat. God is in command of the charge. As of this moment, the cure is very much more deadly than the sickness. I urge you, commissioners, to follow God and common sense. No mask, no social distancing, no contact tracing, no vaccine. It won't work. We can overcome this problem if we act reasonably. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt. You know, fortunately, we live in a democracy, right? And every citizen has the right to their opinion. So I think you've well stated your opinion. You know, it is a strong opinion. It is not consistent with what the state or the federal government is recommending to them, but you certainly have your right to your opinion, and we respect you and your opinion. So thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And we've missed you at our meeting. We've missed you at our meeting.
Well, you want me to come back and bug you? There's a whole lot going on in fishing world, and I'm telling you. Right now, there's a group, recreational fishing reform group, that wants to file suit against the trawlers for violating the Clean Water Act because they are following regulations. They're trawling in there as well as opposed to, and they're throwing the bycatch back overboard as best they can. But they are contending that that is a violation. If that's a violation, then so is a ferry crossing the bar. So is your boat going across the mud flat. So is pumping sand back on the beach. Somebody better be careful.
I hope you spoke to Senator Steinberg yesterday about it.
I did.
Okay.
All right. That concludes the regular session of our meeting. But before we adjourn, I believe we do have a closed session issue. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Commander?
If I called you out a while back about an issue with fire hydrants at Scotch Hole, did you ever find that conclusion to that?
Yes, we have not yet had a conversation with Scotch Hole about it, but I think there was some discussion around who owns or who's responsible for the hydrants in the water system. And based on my research, it's still Scotch Hole. I think at one point there was some discussion it's unclear with them. They're thinking that we're responsible, but based on, again, my research, we don't have any documentation here showing that we took over that water system or the hydrant.
Yeah. It came up in question years ago.
Right.
And they also tried to get us to take over or have something to do with the sewer system. It was all in that same time period. Maybe it was 2014, 13?
Somewhere around there. I remember the discussion.
When I called Juan that same day, Jody Suri, who's fire chief in Midway Fire Department, mm-hmm. and called me and said there was a number of fire hydrants that were functioning properly in Scotch Hole. Are you familiar with this at all?
No, I just remembered that the question came up about whose responsibility it was.
There was a number of them, and they were saying the county had taken those, and the county was saying they weren't responsible.
No, we never.
I was like, that's pretty serious. If I had to call work, that's a residential people building.
Right.
So,
I know as my tenure on the board, I think John and I came on at the same time, there was discussion, but we never made any agreement that it was our responsibility.
No, at one time they wanted us to take over their sewer system.
Right.
They wouldn't give it to us, and we said no.
Yeah, well, one little bit I could find out about it, there was one of the big problems in the morning, the accident, maybe even those drawings of the water system. So you took it over a system that we didn't even know where it was.
Right.
Well, I just think we need to make sure that maybe people in Scotch Hole, I don't know, it's pretty serious. The fires don't work. And I hope everybody's not thinking somebody else is
happy. Well, there's
From what I remember, that's from 5-6 years ago, the biggest issue is that all this was put in out there. Nobody has the mapping, okay,
right,
as far as when anything's out, the depth of anything. That was one reason that the county walked away from it, because if anything ever happened, you have no idea what you're digging, how deep you're digging, and all this other kind of stuff, and you have no locations. And that was the deal, and that's why we walked away from it.
But there's some precedent for this. I think it is, anyway. Remember when we took over the South Windsor Water Department, right? And one of the concerns was that they were not detailed drawings around where the existing or the prior existing hydrants were, right? And exactly all where the lines went. But as a part of our agreement, they gave us the money to do that and more. They gave us over $100,000 in cash as a part of us taking it over. And part of that money, very small amount, was designated to make sure that we did that. You know, so we were not asked to assume that, even as we assumed the responsibility for the water department. They paid for it out of their funds. So, okay, great.
You know, you still patients the flood, it gets locked down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, obviously, they have a fire out there, and, you know, a place to get burned out or help if somebody gets killed because.
I think it's a matter we ought to resolve. We ought to meet with them, have some discussion with them, and try to resolve it. Because you're right. I mean, we want them to be safe, right? I'm sure they do, too. The question is, who's going to help pay for it? And it does cost us. It does cost. All right. All minds are clear. Then can I have the floor? Sarah, you there?
Yep.
Okay. Now, are there any other people still on the line other than Commissioner Bazemore?
No, I don't have anyone in the waiting room, and it's just Commissioner Bazemore.
All right, but at least you worked it out so that if someone wanted to stay until after closed session, right? Mm-hmm. They would have the opportunity before we close the meeting. So that's beautiful. So that's now,
I have received another complaint from Rosemead, and last week was hard in town, mm-hmm. Of course, I came by Windsor, and their dumpsters were all full.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really think we need to have that talk with them, that they are very close to breaching their contract. And I
carry a trash can a little bit hard than I had to carry it back home.
It's ridiculous.
And you know how many times I've called them on 17, the major site, at least twice a month for the last 3 or 4 months, and they keep promising. Now, the last thing they said is they've recently had a new truck, right, an additional truck that can come in and pick up the things and whatever. We have two compactors at 17, and sometimes they're both full, and they close it down.
It was
nuts.
Not yesterday, but last Sunday, Hardintown didn't open. At all. I don't know if there was. So I sent Mr. Kavanaugh a text message and he assured me he'd look into it. He has not followed up with me. But yeah, I had several people.
It is time we took this well above Mike's level, his pay grade, because he ain't doing
well. Well, even Mr. Daner. I mean, as much as I like Mr. Daner, but.
We can go higher than that.
He's not handling that either.
Another issue, too. Driveways, especially just as you're coming out of the
That's right.
And they're going to require, I know it's going to require constant maintenance where people stop it and take it all right there. But that's just what it requires. It requires some constant maintenance.
Oh, great. They say, there was always it was a question of whose property is that owned? Is that on DOT right away or was that theirs? But they caused it. So we asked them to fix it. They then, so they say, purchase a, I don't know, it's a grader or
there's one at
whatever. They have one now. They didn't have.
Site.
So, you know, but they don't come out unless you call them, even though the maintenance people there at the sites call them all the time, saying people are complaining. But if you call, then all of a sudden somebody comes out. We shouldn't have to call.
It's
just crazy.
We will pile rock.
I have not
gotten
any.
They got a backhoe.
You mean me want a shovel? I think they came out and throw some rocks in those holes as they started.
They got a backhoe.
They throw a couple of shovels full of rocks and they come out.
Keep the bin.
With a few sites that we have, they bought a backhoe to say that they would handle this. They got rocks stored at their site. And they're too lazy to take it and put it in the hole proactively. That's nuts. Huh? All right. Well, Juan, you gonna handle that?
Oh yes.
Please. Yeah. If it takes some letter to them from our attorney saying that we believe they're in violation of their contract, we gotta get an answer to this. It's nuts.
Yes,
and they're crazy coming up for renewal of their contract and won't take care of it. They're crazy. Anyway. All right. Hearts and minds are clear? Yes. Be the adjourned. Thank you all.
I'm a fool, man. I've got to rob the
Wait, you know, in Lewis and I, your district, they're robbing. Their motion to go into.